Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Simply Electrifying, the technology that transformed the world, from Benjamin Franklin to Elon Musk, by Craig R. Roach, narrated by Tom Perkins. Prologue. Just imagine. Franklin found electricity a curiosity and left it a science. Carl Van Doren, 1938. Imagine your world without electricity. No morning alarm clock or coffee maker. No electric lights, heat, or air conditioning. No whirling electric motors. And no computers or cell phones. This was the world 265 years ago in Philadelphia, the birthplace of the modern science of electricity. The morning alarm was the sun rising or the cock crowing. Coffee and heat required a simple wood stove. Muscle power and, perhaps literal, horsepower drove businesses. And any computing going on was surely done with pencil and paper. No one could imagine a world with electricity, because at that time the notion of such a force was fantastical. Man had not yet captured and harnessed such power. Without electricity, the urban night was dimly lit at best and often dangerous. Imagine sitting around a candle trying to read or sew or do close work of any kind. It would have taken over 100 candles to give the same amount of light produced by a single 100-watt incandescent electric light bulb. Getting close to the open flame could mean a shirt sleeve, lock of hair, or curtain could be set on fire. The dangers continued outside and ranged from tripping along a dark street to being mugged, or worse. The one partial consolation might have been that, without electric lights, there was nothing to obstruct the beauty of a star-filled night sky. Amazingly, a few bold minds were eager and able to imagine electricity, to see the unseen. None was more important than Philadelphia's Benjamin Franklin, who allowed the world to see electricity one day in June 1752, by flying his kite in the midst of a storm. Because of the obvious danger, doubts persist to this day whether Franklin actually flew his kite in a storm, but there is no reason to doubt that he conducted his kite experiment, perhaps in less dramatic weather. While Franklin's unique intellect was surely central to his success, so too was the fact that he lived at a watershed moment for science and technology. The scientific revolution had already transformed man's understanding of the universe, and the industrial revolution would soon begin to transform the world's economy. Newton and others had already begun to explain in precise mathematics the mechanics of the universe in terms of the force of gravity. Eventually, Franklin and others would do the same for electricity, as well as for magnetism and light. At the same time, there were several common scientific and medical beliefs that seem primitive or even cruel today. One example is the practice of bloodletting as a remedy for fever and infection. It is more likely that George Washington, among many others, died from such remedies than from the ailment he contracted toward the end of his life. Great shifts in science and technology sometimes spread progress unevenly across the many facets of life. Benjamin Franklin and his kite represent only the first step in a fascinating journey from an era when life with electricity was barely imagined by a few to a time in which life without electricity was unimaginable for most. That journey was powered by the bold actions of many famous and some infamous figures who were sometimes propelled forward and as often pushed back by the demands and mores of their times. These innovators built the powerful, pervasive electric infrastructure on which everyone in the developed world now depends. The first cornerstone of that infrastructure was remarkable scientific advances made by Benjamin Franklin, Michael Faraday, James Clerk Maxwell, Nikola Tesla, and Albert Einstein. Indeed, Einstein believed that the discovery of electricity was not just a stop along the path to modern physics, it was the path itself. Man's understanding of electricity led to many of the major breakthroughs in all of physics. The second cornerstone was the technology based on this great science. Samuel Morse's telegraph was the first fruit of the hard-won scientific knowledge linking electricity and magnetism. The fact that the purpose of the telegraph was for communication is significant. The electricity business and the telecommunications business were born of the same science, and yet the latter has far outpaced the former in technological advances in modern times. The first war between technology titans in electricity featured Thomas Edison against George Westinghouse, with Nikola Tesla by Westinghouse's side. Their clash was the original battle of the currents. In the end, Westinghouse's alternating current system bested Edison's direct current system. Alternating current allowed for economies of scale because electric power plants could be linked to customers across a vast distance. Interestingly, few people today are fully aware of the key roles played by Westinghouse and Tesla. The third cornerstone was the business practices that governed the nationwide spread of electric service. Innovative business magnate Samuel Insull set the standard here with a full understanding of and belief in economies of scale. His aim was to spread the fixed cost of power plants and transmission lines over an increasing number of customers, thus causing the per-unit price of electricity to fall. Eventually, electricity became available and affordable to all, and in this way Insull implemented the first democratization of electricity. The pursuit of the big, however, is also what got Insull into trouble and why his reputation is still infamous to some today. In 1932, Insull owned one of just three holding companies that together controlled almost half of all power generation in America. When his holding company failed in the Great Depression, none other than President Franklin D. Roosevelt blamed Insull for the severity of the ensuing economic collapse. The fourth cornerstone, closely linked to the third, was government regulation. In the early 1900s, Insull had actually invited state regulation of utilities. With such regulation, he won the exclusive areas of service, utility monopolies that would allow economies of scale, in exchange for giving the states the right to enforce cost-based rates for electric service. Federal regulation, however, came about during the Great Depression. During his presidency, Franklin D. Roosevelt aggressively broke up the large holding companies, one of the largest government interventions ever outside of wartime. That set up a jurisdictional tension between states and the federal government that remains in full force today. Environmental regulation also is part of the regulatory cornerstone, an increasingly important part. The deadly air pollution episodes in Donora, Pennsylvania, and New York City were an important impetus. The landmark book Silent Spring, 1962, by Rachel Carson, is often credited with creating the modern environmental movement, with its combination of Carson's compelling documentation of the detrimental effects of pesticides and her personal courage. She continues to have a major impact on the electricity business, despite the fact that she never directly wrote or spoke about that industry. Carson's template for environmental action can be seen today in efforts ranging from former Vice President Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth in 2006 to former President Barack Obama's Clean Power Plan in 2015, initiatives meant to address widespread concern about global climate change. Today, fundamental changes in both scientific knowledge and cultural values have led to the question of whether an entirely new electric infrastructure must be built. The fact that environmental concerns, especially global climate change, drive and dominate the electricity business is one of those changes. Add to that the growing concern about electric service reliability at the customer's doorstep rather than at the grid, due to more frequent storms and cyber warfare. And further, add a demand for choice in electricity supply, no different than the demand for choice in transport, reflected in the rise of Uber. With such fundamental changes, there is the possibility of a second battle of the currents. This time, the opposition would pit the well-established electrical grid against personal power from new industry leaders like Elon Musk, who often deploy smaller-scale, renewable technologies. A second democratization may also lie on the horizon, in which individual consumers can vote with their wallets for more environmental protection, more doorstep reliability, and more choice. The ambitious narrative summarized here reflects the view that the only way to truly understand the past and anticipate the future is to use a wide-angle lens. All 265 years of the history of electricity must be taken into consideration. If the story starts with Edison, for example, it will have missed much of the first cornerstone, the great science of Franklin, Faraday, and Maxwell. Likewise, it is important to capture the full range of factors driving the evolution of the electricity industry. Only with assessments of the wider fields of science, military strategy, and geopolitics, particularly the geopolitics of the Cold War, can one explain the rise of nuclear power. Only with assessment of the strategic opportunities in the auto business, plus a deep dive into the culture of cars, can one anticipate the future of electric vehicles. And only with the wide view can we judge whether the seemingly confrontational cabinet appointments of President Donald Trump might actually set the stage for constructive compromise on climate. Electricity is at the core of all modern life, yet the full story of this revolutionary force has remained untold until now. Part 1. The Age of Franklin, a time of awe and discovery. Chapter 1. Benjamin Franklin's Kite. He snatched the lightning from the sky and the scepter from the tyrants. Anne-Robert Jacques Turgot, 1779. Death and slaughter of a man and his son at plow, together with four horses. Read the headline of a news bulletin in 1680. The culprit? Lightning. The bulletin went on to explain in graphic detail that the boy's clothes were rent from his body and his hat torn in two or three pieces, and that his body was burned from his neck down his back. So fearsome was lightning at the time that a 1766 sermon predicted that on Judgment Day, God's wrath would be carried out with thunder and lightning so powerful that, with one clap, the earth will split to the very center and the whole globe crumble. In an earlier sermon of 1746, a different preacher expressed little hope that man could understand this great mystery of lightning, concluding that human capacities cannot fully comprehend it. Benjamin Franklin refused to concede that lightning was incomprehensible. Indeed, by flying his kite in the midst of a storm one day, Franklin revealed that lightning could be understood by man as an electrical phenomenon and not just as God's wrath. Imagine Franklin's courage when he flew his kite. This was not just intellectual courage, with the gravest consequence being public embarrassment for a failed experiment. What he proposed was no safe lab trial. Franklin took on lightning, one of the most mysterious and dangerous forces then known. With his kite experiment, Franklin enabled man to see the unseen. Franklin inspired an era of science in which electricity was the essence of scientific inquiry, the Age of Franklin. Through all this, Franklin showed the world the physical and intellectual courage that would continue to propel him throughout his remarkable life. In his day, Franklin was recognized as one of the world's foremost scientists, with some of his contemporaries referring to him as the Newton of electricity. Yet today there is a tendency to downplay his scientific contribution. Take a look at America's $100 bill. Franklin's face is on one side and Independence Hall on the other. Fair enough, but why are there no images related to his experiments, his kite, or his lightning rod? Some have argued that without his diplomatic success, few would have paid attention to his science. Increasingly, however, modern historians are beginning to believe the reverse is more accurate. Scholars have recently argued that his reputation as a scientist created the opportunity for his success as America's original diplomat. His electrical experiment and theories made him a celebrity around the world, and that celebrity gained him access to the dinner tables of the well-to-do and influential in France. From that perch, he negotiated the alliance with France that gave the American colonies the troops, ships, and supplies needed to beat the English at Yorktown and win the Revolutionary War. Electricity's greatest contribution to the world is generally thought to be light, but to America, it may quite well have been freedom. The lasting meaning of Franklin's story is that science and scientists matter greatly to the history of electricity. This makes electricity fundamentally different from the other widespread forms of energy like coal and oil. In Franklin's day, scientists were thought to bring wisdom to any issue of the day, whether that be technology, politics, law, or culture. Just think of the progress that could be made in now deadlocked debates on global climate change and other challenging issues if that were still true today. The origins of his success. It is said that success happens when opportunity and talent collide. For Franklin, it is arguably more accurate to say his scientific success came when context and personal ambition collided. Born in Boston in 1706, Franklin was a product of his time. He lived in the wake of the scientific revolution. His was an era when, for those with the money and time, science was central to both entertainment and social conversation. It also was a time of economic progress for the American colonies, and Franklin would rapidly become a wealthy man. His early years molded his character in ways that contributed to his great success. At the age of 12, Franklin was apprenticed to his brother James as a printer for a term that was expected to be 9 years. Let's pause a minute to think of the importance of printing at the time. A printer was a skilled worker, and a print shop might be thought of as the Google of the day, a place where information was routinely collected, updated, and disseminated to those with access. So powerful was this dissemination of information that historians identify printing as an essential tool for huge cultural shifts, ranging from the Protestant Reformation to the scientific revolution. As an apprentice, Franklin spent hours reading and learning from what he printed. Printers were exposed to a unique education. Another great scientist, Michael Faraday, would later enjoy the same education in the print shop of his mentor. Franklin came to see the printed word as something of an arbiter of the truth, writing that printers are educated in the belief that when men differ in opinion, both sides ought equally to have the advantage of being heard by the public, and that when truth and error have fair play, the former is always an overmatch for the latter. At 17, Franklin breached his apprenticeship and ran away from Boston. He eventually settled in Philadelphia, where he started his own printing business with another former apprentice, Hugh Meredith. During his time as a printer, Franklin enjoyed a series of successes that revealed his broad talents, depth of intellect, and abundance of energy. One such success was a new fireplace, the Franklin stove, which conserved wood. He called his invention Another Sun because of the light and warmth it provided. Reflecting an innate altruism, Franklin refused to patent his inventions. This "to patent or not to patent" question became a recurring theme in the history of electricity. Franklin stepped away from his printing business in 1748 at age 42. The printing trade had given Franklin the wealth that allowed him to retire in order to serve the world with his scientific genius and to serve America with his talent for diplomacy. Franklin had a confidence born of hard-won successes, and he believed he could achieve anything he put his mind to. He had a breadth of curiosity made manifest by a long list of achievements that would be hard to match in any age and he was savvy enough to let practical and political reality guide him to what worked. Finally, Franklin had a depth of commitment to serve mankind in general and America in particular. It would be wrong, however, to see Franklin as a perfect man. Franklin was inclined to pranks and hoaxes. One example involved his brother James, who published a newspaper called the New England Courant. James was intrigued one day to find an article under his door signed "Silence Do-Good," which he liked enough to print in his newspaper on April 2, 1722. Over the next 6 months, he would find 15 of these articles. James did not know that Mrs. Do-Good was actually the nom de plume of his 16-year-old brother Benjamin. In addition to playing tricks, Franklin became a scofflaw when he breached his apprenticeship. He also sired a son out of wedlock, perhaps with a prostitute. Failure is sometimes a necessary step on the road to success, and this was the case with Franklin's first trip to London. The governor of Pennsylvania, William Keith, falsely promised to provide letters of introduction and credit for Franklin. At age 18, Franklin found himself abandoned and far from his home with little money. He got a job as a printer and spent 18 months learning about printing and about London. While cited far less than his later visits to London, the first journey helped forge a character of confident self-reliance. The Scientist, the Right Time, and a Plan. The historian I. Bernard Cohen, a professor emeritus of the history of science at Harvard, declared that Franklin became one of the best-known living scientists of his time by providing the first satisfactory theory of electricity, and was the primary creator of this new science. Astonishingly, in an era when simple communication meant sending a letter that could take days or weeks to arrive, Franklin won much of his fame in a short 5-year span, from about 1747 to 1752, primarily by sending a series of letters to Peter Collinson in London concerning Franklin's own experiments with electricity. What did it take to transform Franklin from successful printer to internationally famous scientist? Clearly it took intellectual genius, but more than that, Franklin had an intuition for the needs and preoccupations of his time. In Franklin's day, the term science meant wisdom, while natural philosophy coincided with what is called physics today. In the 18th century, reports on the latest experiments were commonly published even in provincial newspapers. As an apprentice printer, Franklin had taught himself to write by studying journals like the popular Spectator, in which Joseph Addison boasted that he had brought philosophy out of closets and libraries, schools and colleges, to dwell in clubs and assemblies, at tea tables, and in coffee houses. It was the right time, and Franklin had a solid plan to get noticed. He would become what today would be called a public intellectual, and he understood that distant and lowly colonists needed the support of London in order to be recognized as high-profile scientists. To this end, Franklin built on his relationships with botanist and Royal Society fellow Peter Collinson in London, particularly when Franklin learned that Collinson was searching for a colonial protégé. It is Collinson who would take Franklin's letters, which reported on his experiments with electricity, and have them read to the Royal Society in London. Science in Newton's Shadow. Isaac Newton's famous Principia was published in 1687, just 19 years before Franklin's birth. Newton's other classic, Optics, was published in 1704. These two works were fundamentally different, and it was Optics that had a greater influence on Franklin. Optics was accessible to him because it was written in English rather than Latin, and, more important, according to Cohen, was devoted to the description of beautiful, simply performed experiments. Franklin's work was consistent not only with Optics' focus on experimentation, but also with the fundamental nature of the effort. In Principia, Newton theorized that gravity was a function of mass, and that the type of material did not matter. Optics contrasted sharply with this view because it focused deeply on types of material, including specific materials that would conduct electricity or were magnetic. Franklin's work is in the same vein as optics, since Franklin was, as Cohen notes, an experimental Newtonian scientist. Franklin's scientific work lived up to the motto of the Royal Society, "On the word of no one." That is, the laws of nature should be discovered through experimentation, not taken for granted. This commitment to experimental proof was the foundation of the scientific revolution launched by Newton and others. The study of electricity was a great test of that commitment, since there was likely a temptation to stick with the celebrated findings of Newton, rather than develop a different view. But the boldest electricians did not succumb to that temptation. They let themselves be confronted and confounded by the differences between gravity and electricity. Newton's gravity was all about attraction of celestial bodies, but electricity was different. It concerned both attraction and repulsion. The goal was to explain the coexistence of attraction and repulsion, something that had never been attempted before. Franklin would do just that in his letters to Collinson. Franklin's Letters to London, An Exquisite Experiment. In two letters to Collinson dated May 25th and July 28th, 1747, Franklin explained his basic theory of electricity. It depended on the concept of balance or equilibrium. When an object, such as a piece of amber or a glass tube, had its normal amount of electrical matter or electrical fluid, that object was in a normal state and did not attract or repel other objects. However, if the object lost or gained electrical fluid and became unbalanced, the object became charged. Franklin established definitions for these imbalances. When an object gained electrical fluid, it was positively charged. When the object lost electrical fluid, it became negatively charged. Franklin's theory focused on the redistribution of a single type of electrical matter or electrical fluid. Most important, Franklin's theory explained attraction and repulsion. Attraction occurs when two objects or materials are brought together and one is positively charged and the other negatively charged. So, with electrical fluid, as in romance, you could say that opposites attract. In contrast, if two objects are brought together and both are either positively charged or negatively charged, the objects will repel one another. Like repels like. Franklin's theory was sometimes called the single fluid theory. The experiments in which he proved his theory were elegantly simple, and they sometimes had the feel of a parlor game because real people were the ones positively or negatively charged. In one experiment, Person A rubs a piece of glass with silk to create static electricity. When A passes the glass to B, sparks fly. Franklin's Letter on the Leyden Jar. In 1746, a university researcher in Holland conducted what he described as a new but terrible experiment. The researcher's name was Peter von Muschenbroek, and the device he developed through the experiment became known as a Leyden jar, after Leyden University, where Muschenbroek worked. The device is best envisioned as an ordinary, partially filled glass jar of water with a brass wire dipped into it. Noted Berkeley historian J. L. Heilbronn says the standard form also has metal foil inside and out. The foil on the inside of the Leyden jar is given an electrical charge by touching the brass wire with a metal rod. The rod got its charge from a glass tube rubbed with silk, which created static electricity. A charge of opposite sign and equal magnitude would then form on the outer metal foil. Because glass is a good insulator, the two charges hold each other in a standoff until a path is created to let the charges come together. Why was the Leyden jar a terrible experiment? When Muschenbroek put his right hand on the outside of the Leyden jar and his left hand on the iron bar that conveyed static electricity to the inside of the jar, his body linked two oppositely charged objects. That opposite charge was the source of the jolt with which his whole body quivered.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?